The movie Gandhi, not surprisingly, is about the life of Gandhi, who struggled for justice and peace through the power of nonviolence. If you've seen the movie Gandhi, there's one particular scene in the movie that is an incredible, incredible story of empathy and solidarity. It took place right after India gained independence from Great Britain in 1947. And there was civil strife throughout all of India. Hindus and Muslims were killing each other. And Gandhi began to fast until the violence stopped. While he was near death from starvation, when a crazed man, a Hindu, barged into where he was staying with food and said, "Gandhi, eat, here, eat, eat. I'm going to hell, but not with your soul, not with your death on my soul." And Gandhi said, "Only God can say who is going to hell. I killed a child," the man confessed. "Why?" "They killed my son. My child. The Muslims killed my child." Gandhi could see this man. He saw the unbearable grief and just this incredible remorse. He felt his pain. His heart broke open for this man. And Gandhi gently said, "I know a way out of hell. Find a child whose mother and father have been killed, and raise that child as your own. But the child must be a Muslim." Can you imagine the power of what Gandhi was asking of this man? To raise a child in the ways of his enemy, to love such a child basically as his own child. Incomprehensible. The wisdom and salvation that Gandhi was offering this man was the power of empathy, of entering into another person's pain and struggle and life. You know, the saying is true, I think. You know, the old saying that you don't really know a person, you can't possibly understand a person, and maybe you can't even love a person unless you're willing to walk a mile in their shoes. Sympathy is to feel sorry for someone. Nothing wrong with sympathy. We could all use a little more sympathy. But to feel sorry for someone, you can stay a step removed from that person. Empathy is to feel with someone, to feel the pain of someone. Their pain is your pain. It's to suffer with. Our scripture today said Jesus saw the crowd, and he saw that they were harassed and helpless, and he had compassion. Now the Greek from which we get the English, the original word for harassed, the Greek, literally means to be skinned of your humanity. To be harassed literally means to be cast down from the woundedness of life. Jesus, it says, saw. He saw them. He saw they were harassed. He saw they were helpless. And you notice, more often than not, the harassed and the helpless are the ones that are normally invisible to society. The ones we don't see, or at least the ones we don't want to see because it makes us uncomfortable. Or if we do see, it's the ones we see through the lens of judgment. But do we really see? Do we see in another, especially those who are harassed, their very humanity skinned from them? Do we see our common humanity? Do we see the image of God in them? Do we see Christ in them? Naomi Tutu said to see, not to look, to see is the first act of love. It says that Jesus saw. He didn't look over the crowd. He saw them. He felt their pain. His heart broke open and compassion poured forth. You know, compassion, we use that word a lot, compassion. Compassion is not a soft, sweet, sentimental, you know, I have compassion. It's not a soft, sweet word. Again, the Greek from which we get Jesus had compassion. The Greek word literally means to physically churn inside. That when you see someone suffer, something physically happens within you. You feel something deep inside. You feel an inner turmoil. Those who feel compassion, it's not just your pain. It's my pain. The person who is compassionate can't walk away. They can't pretend they didn't see. Because they share the pain. Your pain is my pain. The person who feels compassion knows that no one really wins until we all do. As the Apostle Paul said, when one suffers, we all suffer. This week, faith communities across Bend, I'd be curious, others may have the stats on this, but faith communities across Bend have been asked to join together to have a common focus. And that common focus being the pain of poverty, the pain of living in poverty. 20,000 people across the world will die today, because they're too poor to live. A third of them will be children. 850 million people, catch, that's larger, 850 million people in our world struggle in extreme poverty to survive on less than a dollar a day. There are 604 billionaires in the United States. Did you know that? There are 604 billionaires in the United States of America. Countless, countless millionaires. Every 32 seconds, a child is born into poverty in the United States of America, joining the one in five that already live in poverty. 70% of those children living in poverty, 70% of those children have one member of the family who has a job, who is working. And yet, they are still poor. By the time this worship service is over, 100 children across America will have been born into poverty. Central Oregon, 1 in 7 children, 1 in 7 children live below the federal poverty level, which, by the way, was set in 1964. I would think it's a little more expensive to live today than it was in 1964. The federal poverty level and how they set it has not changed since 1964. And still 1 in 7 children in our own backyard live below the federal poverty level. Nearly 30,000 Central Oregonians live below the poverty level. Now, unfortunately, it's not getting better. Unfortunately, due to the economic conditions, due to loss of jobs, due, sadly, to government budget cuts that many are on the backs of the poor, the statistics are actually getting worse than better. Now it's easy to say statistics, and I'm amazed that I actually remembered all of those statistics, but do we see the faces and feel the heartbeats of the men, women, and children that lie and live and struggle beneath the statistics? Fred Craddock, a famous preacher, I love his stories. He's a wonderful storyteller, and he was giving a keynote address at a conference at Clemson University for World Hunger. And there was a young, unassuming woman who was asked to give the devotion before his keynote. And she was coming up to the lectern, and Fred Craddock noticed that she had a yellow legal pad filled with writing. And he was like, oh, no, this is going to be a long, long, long night. And this young woman, in a soft voice, began to speak in what seemed to be a foreign language. And then another, and then another, and then another. She spoke the same sentence in 60 different languages from around the world. When she got to German and French and Spanish, Craddock began to make out what she was saying. And then finally in English, "Mommy, I'm hungry." And she sat down. It's really easy for me to say 1 in 5 children in the United States of America live in poverty. It's really easy for me to say 1 in 9 children in Central Oregon goes to bed hungry at night. Do we see these children? Do we see the tear, the one solitary tear, falling down the cheek, looking up at their mother, saying, "Mommy, I'm hungry"? Do we feel the pain and the desperation, the helplessness, the shame of a mother who does not have enough food to feed her own child? Our scripture said Jesus saw they were harassed and helpless. His heart broke open, and compassion poured forth. Let's walk in the shoes for just a second of a mother here in Bend. A single mother of two children, feeling really fortunate because she has a full-time job. She got a job as a cleaner in one of the local resorts. Hates it, but I have a job. She earns $8.50 an hour, which is minimum wage in Oregon, which means annually she gets nearly $17,500 a year annually, which is significantly below the federal poverty level, again set in 1964. She shares a really small apartment with her two children in a less than desirable neighborhood. The police have visited the apartment across the hall at least 6 times for domestic abuse complaints. She's pretty convinced that the apartment 2 doors down, she's pretty convinced they're selling drugs out of their apartment. But she can't afford to live anywhere else. Her kids are in an after-school program until the money runs out, and every month the money runs out, because most of her money is spent in rent and food. So when the money runs out, they can't do the after-school program any longer, so the kids are left alone, unsupervised. Her 12-year-old car sits idle in the parking spot she has with her apartment because it broke down not long ago and she doesn't have enough money. Should I feed my kids or should I fix my car? She doesn't have enough money to fix the car, and if she had enough money, she wonders whether she could actually afford the gas to actually run the car. She can't afford health insurance. She prays every day that no one gets sick. She struggles with depression. And there are days that it just seems like the depression will absolutely overwhelm her, and she does all she can to hold the depression back. At the same time, she knows to ask for help to go see a counselor is out of the question. She can't afford that. Every single month, she gets further and further and further and further behind. Her landlord is threatening to evict her because she's a little behind in the rent, and he seems to have absolutely no patience, no understanding for the situation that she's in. She would love to come home every day. She would love to be there for her kids. She would love to help them with their homework. She would love to be a positive influence, trying to protect them from all of the negative influences that are around them. But she can't. She has to work. And in fact, she's desperately trying to find, in this climate, a second job just to try to make ends meet. She's ashamed. She feels a sense of failure. She's ashamed that her kids, more often than not, wear the same clothes to school 2, 3, 4 days in a row. Her heart breaks when she tucks her little girl in at night and her little girl looks up at her and says, "Mommy, I'm still hungry." And she has nothing to give her. Versions of that story are lived out. Thousands of versions of that story are lived out in our backyard. Our backyard. Every single day. Oscar Romero, Archbishop Oscar Romero, said, "You know, the Bible is clear about one thing. The Bible is clear that God has compassion for the poor. The Bible is clear that God's heart breaks for the poor. The Bible is clear that God is on the poor side and asks you to be on their side as well." Jesus saw. He saw them. His heart broke. And compassion poured out. God is able to work miracles. I mean, it's so easy to throw our hands up in despair while there's nothing I can do. God works miracles with those who allow their hearts to break open and Christ's compassion to pour forth. Robert Theobald, the futurist, said the 20th century was the century of getting ahead, the century of winning the race, the century of technological advancement, medical breakthroughs, personal economic gain, space exploration. And then he asked, we've been running the race. Are we really ahead? What's been the cost? And look at all of those we have left behind. He said the 21st century must be the century of healing. And that begins with you and me. May God give us the eyes to see. May God give us hearts willing to break open. May God give us compassion and wisdom that recognizes no one wins until we all do. And may God give us the conviction, the courage, the tireless passion to work towards a world where no child, in our backyard, across the world, wherever it will be, no child has to go to bed hungry and look in their mother's eyes and say, Mommy, I'm hungry. May it be so.